This is The Impromptu, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. And now, your hosts for today, Michael Norton and Alex Knight.
So, in an interesting update from last episode, it turns out that female Thor is outselling the old Thor by 30%.
Well, that's interesting news.
Yep. So it pays to have female characters. That are mighty and wield cosmic power.
That'll show the naysayers.
There's even literally a scene where somebody calls out female Thor for being a feminist or whatever. Like some, for lack of a better description, basically a Gamergate guy. You're a woman. You suck. Like this whole thing. And she like bashes him in the face.
Well, he had it coming.
It's pretty great. It's a pretty great scene.
Yeah. I'm sure that was a very cathartic experience for the artist and writing team to do that. Actually, I haven't read, you know, it's Thor's one of those characters I never really got into. And I don't know, he never really seemed that interesting to me. And I'm kind of thinking now would be a good time to actually start with this new reincarnation of the character.
Well, it's not a reincarnation.
Or a reinvention.
It's like, because if you carry Mjolnir, then you're Thor.
Right, right.
So whosoever possesses this hammer shall wield the power of Thor. And thus, a woman has picked up the hammer, as women have in the past. Black Widow actually held Mjolnir at one point.
Oh, I didn't know
during a battle. So really, it's all about being worthy, and anyone can be worthy.
Yeah.
The hammer actually decides who's worthy somehow.
Right.
But, yeah.
As it would.
Yes. Being a hammer.
Right.
Of immense magical power. It's like the sorting hat, but for bashing people in the face.
And they, did you hear that they pulled the alternate Batgirl cover?
Yes.
And the artist made an apology with it. I thought it was admirable for him to do that, but
He basically was the first, like, after the backlash, he was the first to stand up and say, "Yeah, you know what? Like, I made my cover, but the cover was a reference to the Killing Joke and it really has nothing to do with the current storyline."
Right, right. You know, and I know some people are, there are some people that take issue even with the Killing Joke too, but I think you have to kind of, I wasn't personally, like, I understand why certain people were upset by the nature, like, obviously the cover was very suggestive, like, just what the Joker was doing to her too, but it's like, the Joker, like, you have to understand the personality of the character. Like, he's a psychopath, and it's not like he's only targeted women, right? I mean, because he's killed men in horrible ways. He killed Jason Todd and maimed him horribly, and you know, he'll do anything to hurt the people that are closest to that person, right? He wants to find the ultimate way to get to somebody, whether it's Batman or whatever, or, you know, ultimately he wants to get to Batman, right? He wants, the Joker's goal is to push Batman over the edge, right? To make him lose control, right? So, whether it's doing something directly to Batman or to somebody that's close through him, you know, using Jim Gordon as a proxy or whatever to get through, he's gonna do it. And, you know, I don't know if you listened to, the latest episode of Rocket, but, it's interesting to hear different opinions and perspectives on this, because I know, Brianna Wu made a comment about how, like, first of all, just if you kind of just look at the piece as just like a piece of art, essentially, like from an artistic perspective, it's an amazing piece of art. It's really well done. But you know, you can see why people would be upset about it. But it's interesting because certain people that that I'm aware of that, you know, identify as feminists are not necessarily as upset about this cover as some people are. So it seems to be either you really, really, really hate it or you're really not bothered by it so much.
Yeah. Or you're in the camp that's basically like, well, as a piece of art, I like it, but it's really not appropriate in front of the current Batgirl storyline.
Yeah, you know, and this is actually kind of ties in nicely with something I've been talking about lately, which is the ongoing debate about violence in video games and that we need more diversity in video games. And it just seems to be like the go-to strategy for so many games today that we need to have these hyper-violent games. And for me, I'm not opposed to violence per se. I've played a lot of violent games. It doesn't bother me. Yeah. It doesn't like, I'm not affected by it. I don't, you know, it doesn't make me want to go and kill someone. The over time though, I have found that I get more and more tired playing, gratuitously violent games, you know, and I feel like now that I'm a little bit older and more mature, like I feel like there needs to be more of a reason for the violence in the game. Like if the violence is not directly connected to the plot, like if you know what I mean, like if it's not really advancing anything, then, and I think this goes the same for things like rape, for example. Like when you take a game like Hotline Miami 2, now I really enjoyed the first Hotline Miami game, and I know some people didn't like it. That's fine. I don't have a problem with hyper violent games like that. I actually thought the story was fairly interesting. Like there was just this kind of weird, mysterious plot going on. You know, you didn't know what the hell was going on to this character. You know, but and the reveal at the end was really interesting. So I liked the first one. The second one though, when I first started the game, it gave me the option to either block or allow scenes with sexual violence. So I said, that's interesting. I wonder how bad it is. I kind of regret not turning it off because, like, the first scene in the game is you basically kill everybody on that level, and then at the end you end up raping a woman. And it made me feel really disgusting. And I actually had to stop, turn off the game, and really think about it for a little bit because it really deeply bothered me. They tried to pass it off as, well, this isn't really happening because it turns out like you're on the set of a movie and the director yells cut and he's giving you direction about what's going on in the scene. But it's like it has no purpose in the game. It's not connected to the plot. It's just they stuck it in there for shock value. And that to me is something that doesn't really sit well with me. And especially with rape stuff, it's so like you have to approach it really carefully and sensitively. And like if you're going to have a rape scene in a movie or whatever it is, fine, but it has to be done carefully. There has to be a reason why it's really there. It's not just we want to just have women abused for no reason in the movie. Like you know what I mean? Like more like an exploitation flick. Cause then it's an exploitation movie. That's a different genre altogether. But so there has to be a real reason for that. You know, and actually I'm reminded there was one scene in an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer where it's where Spike crosses the line with Buffy. I don't know if you remember when he's basically in her house and he's basically forcing himself on her and she's telling him stop, stop, and he won't get off her. And what's the name of the actor who played Spike? Now I'm forgetting his name. James something.
James Marsters.
Yeah. He said something to the effect of how that scene was very difficult to shoot because, you know, it's effectively a rape scene, even though he didn't actually carry it all the way through, but it made him feel uncomfortable.
And I mean, because it's Buffy, he couldn't have, because she's as strong as him.
Right, exactly. But,
which unfortunately isn't the case.
But the character at that point was like, you know, he got to this point where he was just like infatuated with her and he was obsessed with her and he was, you know, so like, but again, like that's an example where, you know, it has to be approached very carefully. And Hotline Miami 2 is a perfect example where they just threw it in there just to shock people. And the same goes for this Batgirl alternate cover. It was just there. It's just there for the sake of being a reference to something that happened in the past with no ties and connection to what was in the actual book itself, which is just, it's just unnecessary. So I have less problem with the cover itself just being, I just thought it was unnecessary in general. Like it served no purpose. So. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, stuff really has to serve the plot because, as you said, it just being there is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it would make, if I bought that, I would think like, I'd be like, oh crap, is the Joker actually going to do something? Like, does he cripple Batgirl again? Like what's going on? And,
well, yeah.
You know, exactly. I'd be sorely disappointed if what I saw on the cover had nothing to do with the contents of the story. I'd be like, wow, that's just misleading.
Well, yeah. And it's basically making you worry for nothing. It's like, yeah. Oh God, is something really horrible going to happen? Do I want to read this?
Now, granted it's an alternative cover, but what about people just walking into a comic store that are not super savvy about or keep track of like all the alternate covers? What if they pick it up, they're like, oh, it's Batgirl and I wonder what's gonna happen to her considering that Joker's got her in a compromising position here? So, you know, not everyone's gonna be aware that that's an alternate cover and they might pick it up and be disappointed by it.
Yeah, so in the end it's good that they
saw
a reason mm-hmm. and decided to get rid of it.
Yeah
Though I could see them using it as a cover for a reprint of The Killing Joke, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would contextually make sense.
Yeah, but even like the cover of the... the cover of The Killing Joke isn't as suggestive as this because it's just a picture of the Joker with a camera, right?
Mm.
It's not like he's... Like this alternate cover was way more graphic because she's actually in it.
Yeah.
And he's holding her and he's standing behind her. So it's like, it's overtly sexual, obviously. The Joker, the thing with the Joker too, is he's kind of, they've never really addressed this directly, but I know a lot of people feel, or a lot of people interpret the character as being asexual, which I kind of think he is, because he doesn't seem to have any attraction to either men or women. You know, and he's got someone like Harlequin who, he just uses her, but he clearly doesn't have any kind of sexual desire for her, even though she's a super attractive woman and there's no reason why. You know, so he's just...
Well, because his obsession is Batman.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, actually, I got into a conversation with someone the other day about Sherlock Holmes, too, and how he's... Like, I feel that he... We both felt that he is this asexual character because, you know, he uses both men and women to... You know, as a means to an end to get whatever he wants, and he has no desire for either of them. And he's super, super intelligent, but he's kind of crazy. Like he's kind of like a high-functioning sociopath. Like, he just doesn't know how to behave around people properly. Yep. He doesn't know how to have a normal relationship, quote-unquote normal, in the sense that what we you and I consider acceptable, right? But it's just the way he is. And to him, it's like when somebody, when a woman throws herself at Sherlock and she finally gets mad because he's like so aloof, and she's like finally admits to, I'm trying to make it obvious that I'm interested in you. And then Sherlock is always shocked. Like, he doesn't understand what the hell just happened, right? But that's just him. He's oblivious, and he's not trying to be an asshole, even though everybody thinks he's an asshole. That's just his behavior. That's his personality.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting character. Mm-hmm. This is the Joker.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I read an interesting article recently about the erosion of bisexuality in TV series and movies and stuff like that. And I thought about it. And I realized, like, ever since I read this article, I'm starting to see, like, I'm actually noticing this now and stuff. For example, Orange is the New Black, right? Super popular series. Never watched it before, and I decided to watch one episode today. And in the opening episode, the, like, main protagonist, I don't remember her name, the one that's going to jail, she's like, there's this scene where she's sitting down with her fiancé and her parents, and she's basically saying, I'm going to have to go to jail for this thing that I did 10 years ago where I was involved. You know, it was just like just after I graduated college and I had this lesbian. She says it's a lesbian relationship. And then they say, well, you're not a lesbian anymore. She's like, no, I'm not a lesbian anymore. Well, you weren't a lesbian. You're bisexual because you're clearly interested and capable and willing to have a relationship with both a man and a woman.
Oh, and then some.
Exactly. That really bothers me. And it's a continual problem in media. Like, I don't understand why people have an aversion to.
Well, I think in general there's kind of a stigma towards it. It's like, well, no, you're wrong. You have to pick one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's
and it's like even gay people do that. It's like, no, sure. You're not. You can't be like confused and want both. No.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that argument too from gay people. That's really interesting.
And it's upsetting. It's
upsetting.
Like, it's like you're not allowed in our clubhouse.
Yeah.
It's very exclusionary. And we don't really have a right to be that way because, I mean, they're different. We're different. You're different. Everybody's different. There's enough room at the table for everybody. We shouldn't be saying, well, your different is wrong compared to our different.
Well, it's just another form of prejudice, right? So, I mean, there's it, and I can only even imagine how challenging it is for someone who is asexual. Because, I mean, I have a friend who is asexual. He's the only person that I know that I've ever met in my life who has at least come forward and said that they are asexual, and it's a highly misunderstood thing, and a lot of people when you talk to them about it, they get very judgmental about it too. The same thing with bisexual people. It's just, how can you not be attracted? How can you have no sexual desire? That makes no sense. And then they always try to make excuses like, well, maybe you just haven't found the right person yet. It's like, no, you don't. You do not have an understanding about what asexual people have. No drive whatsoever. They just have nothing. And it's really difficult for people to accept this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people tend to be against what they don't understand. It's the same thing with transsexuals. Like, that's going to be the next really big civil rights thing because people just don't get it. Like the whole thing with being gay was difficult enough, but then it's like, being one gender, like being born a gender, and then going, well, no, I don't feel this way. I feel that I should be the other gender. Like, people just don't understand that at all.
Right.
And I think it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of help.
Sure.
From other people in the community to kind of, and it's difficult.
Yeah.
Because as with bisexuality, it's like even a lot of people in that general area are kind of against it too. Like, there's a lot of transphobia in the gay community.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's, I want to publicly say this because I think it's relevant, but I don't think I've ever said it. No, I know I've actually never said it on any podcast. So at the risk of anyone being upset by it, but I remember when I was 19 and I started wearing makeup, and it was a really, really terrible time because my mom, who is, She is a very nice person, but she can be very judgmental. And I remember the exact words that she told me, because I was still living at home at the time. And she said, "Well, I guess this means you're bisexual now. You don't, you know, you clearly must be confused." She's like, "You don't know whether you're coming or going." And I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. But she was really judgmental about that, and it really stuck. Those words stuck with me, because the thing is, I was dating women at the time, and I was attracted to women, so I didn't see this kind of, there are no lines for me. Like, I don't see this. I hate gender stereotypes, so to me, it was just like, oh, I think I look good in makeup. I like the way I look in makeup. I'm going to wear makeup, and this doesn't make me gay. And if you think that, you're welcome to think that, but it doesn't bother me. And I'm just going to be a guy that wears makeup. To me, like, I didn't see any problem with it, but I got some not so great comments from friends at the time that I was hanging out with. And not just from my male friends, but I would get comments from women, like perfect strangers, that you would think, like, it's really rude and inappropriate to ask comments to somebody that you, like, don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I one time walked into a Best Buy, and I was just browsing at the TVs, and one of the clerks came up to me, and she was working the TV aisle, and I started asking her questions, and she looked really distracted. I couldn't figure out, like, why she's not paying attention to the questions I'm asking her. She stopped me mid-conversation and asked, "Excuse me, are you wearing eyeliner?" And I said, "Yes." Now, how is that relevant to what I'm asking you? Let's move on. Like, it's just, and I had a lot of that at the time. And you know, for some people, sexuality is a little bit more fluid. You know, if somebody were to ask me, "Do you see yourself as straight?" I'd probably say yes, but I've never had a relationship with someone of the same sex, but I may be open to it. I've certainly had those thoughts. I find both women and men attractive many times. So for me, I don't slap a label on myself. I like who I like. Right now I'm in a relationship with a woman and I love her very, very much, but that doesn't mean that I don't find people of the same sex attractive. So,
yeah,
I
almost feel like a lot of the hate out there is because people are confused about themselves. That because of all these stereotypes and structured roles that have been created in society, people have these thoughts and feelings and they don't know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of lash out, like I'm going through this thing and I don't want to think about it. So because you're all open about it, I'm going to direct my anger and frustration towards you, basically.
Yeah.
As
I'm sure that's a big... yeah, it is. I'm sure that's part of it. I mean, people tend to project, you know, on, you know, their own feelings or thoughts or whatever. You know, it's not always the case that it's... You know that thing where sometimes people, like the most homophobic people are the ones that are just closeted themselves, and they just... It's really sad because they can't... They're denying this innate feeling that they have, but they can't, for whatever reason, they're unwilling to recognize it. So they just lash out, and sometimes to the extent of, you know, violence and beating up other people. Yeah. It's really sad because, like, I just feel, I don't even feel anger for people like that. I just feel pity that they're basically wasting their life.
Yeah.
You know, by being unhappy. Well, and hurting other people on top of that.
Exactly. Like, if you're just sitting there hating people because you don't want to be however you are and you're not living your best life, then, yeah, it's a total waste.
Yeah.
Because you should be going out there and living life.
Mm-hmm.
You should just be enjoying who you are and what you like.
One of the... one of the... greatest TV series that I thought captured this really well was Queer as Folk. I haven't seen it in a long time, so I already don't remember character names. I don't know if you've seen the series, the young blonde guy that was going out with the older guy. God, I can't remember.
Oh.
AKA the twink that everyone called him the twink because he was like really, really young and he was going out with somebody with the older guy that was like,
right, you know,
15, 20 years older than him.
Yeah, it's been forever since I watched.
Anyways, he was going, he would, it turns out that the guy, this other kid in school that was, you know, in his college or whatever, that was, that basically violently assaulted him, causing him to basically be in the hospital for an extended period of time, almost didn't make it, that guy turned out to be gay, but he was just, he didn't want to admit it to himself. Yeah. And he even ended up, the stupid thing about that is that he actually ended up having an intimate encounter with the guy that he ended up beating up and still didn't want to admit to himself that he was gay. And he would just, every moment he had, he would just attack anybody like that he thought was gay. And it was just so sad.
Yeah. And more recently, the plot line on Glee with Karofsky, the jock that would beat up Kurt.
Mm-hmm. I haven't actually seen that show.
Yeah, I didn't actually see that part of the show. I stopped watching at the start of season 3 after I realized it was mostly an iTunes ad. But, there were some good plots after that, apparently, mm-hmm. including that one.
Mm-hmm. Is that show, does that show, like every episode have a musical number or what?
Several.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then immediately all of those songs are available on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like Gem and the Holly Guys we were talking about the other day that... It's the only show that has, well, at least from that era anyway, that had at least, I think, 2 or 3 musical numbers within the whatever 20, 21, 22 minute time span of an individual episode. So I wonder if they'll ever bring that back with a lot of TV series, at least with kids programming. My Little Pony, I think, is the only one that I know of, at least for an animated series.
Yeah, I think so.
Actually, speaking of animated series, have you seen The Last Unicorn?
I don't think so.
Okay. This is probably one of my top 10 films, animated feature aside. It was released in 1982. And it's a bit of a darker film. It's actually based off of the story by, let me see if I got his name right. Peter Beagle? Peter S. Beagle. He actually wrote the screenplay for the movie. Anyways, it's got lots of talented actors in the movie. The guy that, well, actually, before I even talk about the characters, without any spoilers, basically the plot is this unicorn who lives in this like kind of like enchanted forest and overhears people talking about how they haven't seen unicorns in, you know, God knows how long, and that there are no unicorns left anymore. And she has this inner monologue thinking that can't be, like, there's no way I'm the last unicorn. And so the whole journey is her meeting up with this kind of funny, bumbling, aspiring wizard named Schmendrick. And so they end up finding out that there's this guy named King Haggard, who is actually played by Christopher Lee, which is perfect casting. And he's this really dark, you know, brooding king who effectively nothing makes him happy except for the sight of unicorns. And so he gets this wizard who conjures up this thing called the Red Bull, which is like literally a red bull that has like flames all around it. And the Red Bull goes and chases all of the unicorns and basically drives the unicorns into the ocean. And every time the tide comes in from the castle, King Haggard's able to just watch the unicorns come in on the tide, and that keeps him happy. So they basically want to stop the Red Bull and free the unicorns and whatnot. So that's basically the main plot of the movie without giving anything away. But awesome voice acting, great soundtrack by the band America. They released a Blu-ray, which I actually just bought and watched. And after I got the Blu-ray delivered, I found out that they are doing a remaster on Blu-ray that is not coming out until June. And this is an actual 2K digital transfer from the original film.
Oh, nice.
And apparently it's also going to be uncensored. Apparently they censored something in the movie, and I don't know exactly what it is. But yeah, so that's coming. You can actually pre-order it. I've got the link here. We'll put it in the show notes. But you can get two different versions of it, just the movie itself, or you can get a signed copy from the author for only $25. Cool. But yeah, it's a good movie. I recommend it. I watched it like an unbelievable amount of times when I was a kid. Actually, my sister and I would sit down and watch it on VHS at the time.
Mm. Speaking of animated, I actually just found the other day something really ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So there's this anime called Ghost Stories.
Okay, haven't heard of it.
And when the time came to do an English dub of the anime, the Japanese company that made the anime made the unfortunate mistake of telling the dub company, you can do whatever you want with the script.
Okay, could it be really good or really, really bad?
So what followed was bad, but in a good way. They intentionally rewrote the script to be a ridiculous, absurd comedy. Same stories, same overall plot, but they added a ton of stuff to make it ridiculously silly.
How could they do that, though, without, like, for the overdub, how could they do that without making it look really weird?
Well, that was the thing. They managed to do it. Hmm. Like, I've already watched a few episodes of it, yep. And you'd swear that that's what they're talking about.
Huh.
Like, somehow they managed to just write lines in that fit the mouth movements.
Okay.
And it's nearly seamless.
So is it actually good?
It's pretty hilarious, yeah.
Hmm. Like, so what's it about?
So it's about these kids that come together and weird haunted things keep happening around them. And then the first episode, they trap one of the spirits in their cat. Okay. So then the cat talks and is constantly plotting to escape the cat and then kill them.
Sounds accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. So a regular cat, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they made a number of other changes, like one of the characters they rewrote to be a Pentecostal evangelical Christian. So, like, constantly she's just going, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior? And things to that effect.
I might have to watch this.
It's pretty great.
Is this like a Netflix series, or where do you go watch?
No, you can find all the episodes on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a box set you can buy on Amazon for $50. Mm-hmm. It's 20 episodes, all dubbed with ridiculous scripts, using top quality voice actor talent, I might add.
Okay, all right. Have you tried Crunchyroll?
Yeah, actually.
I've tried it a few times.
I was watching Sword Art Online with it.
Okay. Okay, because I've tried it a few times, and it always seems like they have a lot of stuff, but nothing I want to actually watch. And when I go to find something that I want to watch, it, like, I'll search for it, and they don't have it. It's like, it's kind of the, you know, I feel the same way about it like I do Netflix. A lot of stuff, and a bunch of stuff that I don't want to watch.
Yeah, like, they tend to have a lot of the popular stuff. Like, they have Bleach, they have One Piece, but if you're looking for anything obscure, they probably don't have it.
Right. Well, the one thing I've been wanting to watch is the remade, I think it's from 2008, the remade Guyver Biobooster Armor series, because I'm a huge Guyver fan and I love the original 1980s anime, but it's really hard to, like, you can only get it, you can get it on Blu-ray now, the complete series. I even actually, you know, tried to find the original anime, which I remember distinctly going to Blockbuster and renting the VHS tapes. And as far as I know, at least in North America, I've never seen any, like, re-release of that on Blu-ray, or I haven't even found a DVD of it. So I don't know if it exists dubbed in English, at least.
Yeah.
But, have you seen Guyver? Are you familiar at all with the character?
I'm familiar with it. I haven't actually seen it, though.
You know, actually, I picked up a copy of Guyver 2 Dark Hero, the 1994 live-action movie starring David Hayter, who everyone should know from the Metal Gear Solid series. It's kind of cheesy, but it's got a lot of practical effects. It's much better than the first Guyver movie starring Mark Hamill, which was just not good at all. Guyver 2 is actually much closer to the series, the actual manga itself. It's pretty good. It does have, unfortunately, some tropes, and the women does not pass the Bechdel test or whatever. Is it Bechdel?
Bechdel.
However you pronounce that. There's some bad dialogue in the movie, but overall, I liked it just for the sort of nostalgic factor of watching Guyver on screen kick ass and kill Zoonoids. And what else is going on in the Marvel universe? I heard there's some stuff about the new Ant-Man movie, that this is going to be the most improvisational Marvel movie, which is intriguing.
I hadn't heard that. Was it maybe in an interview or something?
I will send you the link right now. I can totally see that, because Paul Rudd he's good at that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the Ant-Man character. I've never actually read an issue of Ant-Man. I don't know. I'm curious how much humor they're going to have in this movie. I don't know if he's supposed to be like, is he supposed to be a funny
Judy
character?
Judy Greer's in this?
Who is Judy Greer? Should I know?
I believe she's the voice of Pam on Archer.
I haven't seen Archer. I know. I just couldn't get over the terrible animation on it.
Oh, it's way better now.
Oh, is it?
Oh, no, sorry. It's Cheryl. She voices Cheryl. Huh. Not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Ant-Man, like, there's a lot of negative hype about it. Like, people are saying, oh, this could be their first flop. But people said that about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure.
And it was awesome.
Right.
So, I don't know. It could be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. I'm one of those people that I always remain, or I always reserve judgment for when the thing is actually out. I don't want to be one of those people that, this movie's going to suck, you know, 6 months before. It's like, you don't know anything about the movie.
Insects and can grow in size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you excited for Bloodborne?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
It doesn't look interesting to me. Like, it just looks like you go and kill a bunch of monsters. Like,
The thing about the series is that it's absurdly difficult. Like, they have brought back the old school kind of difficulty where if you take the wrong step, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people have really embraced that. Like, finally, a game without, like, all this hand-holding and stuff. Because, yeah, right. Like, the enemies are really tough, and if you make a misstep at any time, they're going to impale you or cut your head off or whatever. And that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, in Dark Souls, all it would do was send you back to the overworld. Or that might have been the second one.
I never played Dark Souls.
But, yeah, I don't know. The reviews, like, the initial leaked reviews sound good, so we'll see.
We shall see.
I'm considering getting it. Like, I'm not completely married to getting it, but... Mm-hmm.
You haven't pre-ordered it?
No. I figure most games you don't really need to. It's like,
well, I mean, if you're going to do a digital download, it's kind of nice because it just preloads the content so you can have it ready on your PS4 because you have to have it instantly available. Can't wait.
Yeah, right at midnight.
Can't wait a few hours for it to download. Well, I don't blame people because I was having a conversation on Twitter with someone about how awful Sony's network is, and as far as being able to deliver stuff it doesn't saturate my.
It's really bad.
Doesn't saturate my connection at all. I get
one of the big problems with the PS4 is that for whatever reason the Wi-Fi chip is crap.
Oh, it's awful. I don't use it. I have to go.
Yeah, I'm plugged into Ethernet at this point
Ethernet, you don't get.
Yeah. It's not even super perfect with that, but, like, when I was connected with Wi-Fi, I was getting booted from Destiny, like, once an hour.
Yeah.
Sometimes 2 times an hour. It was bad.
It's really stupid. Like, we have newer generation of PlayStation hardware, like, the current generation Vita, the PS4, and they shipped with old Bluetooth 2.0, or 2.1 or whatever. So we don't even have low-energy Bluetooth, which doesn't help because the PS4 controller is just awful with battery consumption. And then we have the crappy Wi-Fi chip in both the PS4 and the newer Vita, which don't even do 5 gigahertz 802.11n. I would get at the most, if I ran the speed test, I would get on Wi-Fi, it would always max out at like 11 megabits, 12 megabits. Plugged in, I get maybe, I think the fastest I've ever seen it is like 25 to 30 megabits. And that's just like the speed connection test. For whatever reason, it's not able to get the full bandwidth from my 50 megabit connection. And when I actually download stuff in the PSN store, it is even worse than that. So it's like Wi-Fi is non-negotiable. I cannot use that. It is just beyond slow. You know, and it's noticeable when you're downloading like a 40 megabytes. Hello, 1992. When you're downloading a 40 gigabyte game, you don't want it downloading at 10 megabits per second. You know,
yeah.
I want it to, you know, take, I have 50 megabits. Give me 50 megabits. Like, do they even have a CDN? It just, I don't know. I wonder sometimes.
Supposedly they don't. Like, from the shutdown, we found out that, like, their cloud services are basically rented from Cisco. So they don't even have their own service.
Right.
They just rent it.
See, they should be using, Sony should be using something like Cloudflare to prevent the kind of denial of service attacks that, or at least mitigate most of the extreme denial of service attacks that they've experienced. And they should be using CDN, like a serious CDN, like CacheFly or some one of those big ones. They can afford it and they need easily to be doing that. You know, if they want to be pushing digital downloads and, you know, keep in mind, there are new releases that are digital exclusives and people get pissed off about that, but it's like, guys, this is the future. This is where we're going. Like at one point, you know, we're not going to have consoles anymore that have physical drives on them. Maybe not next generation, maybe the one after that, but at some point, those are going to go away. And, you know, there's a reason why the physical games that come out for PS4 and PS3 are on Blu-ray media, because they have to be able to hold a lot of data. And so if we're expected to download 40 to 50 gigabyte games, they need to have a network that can fully deliver that content at the max possible speed that you can get it at.
Yeah. I mean, and then it's more upsetting because it's like companies like Valve have already solved this. Like Steam, you never encounter issues with Steam.
Sure.
Usually. I mean, I don't think in recent history there's ever been like a major Steam down. People can't download anything. Mm-hmm. Like that hasn't happened.
I don't use it. I have used it in the past, but I think you're right about that. Have they ever had a denial? At least that we know of.
I think Lizard Squad managed to take them down for like a day.
Right. So that's not nearly as bad as Sony, because Sony was down for like what, 5-6 days?
Oh yeah,
just easily. Like flat then, out unavailable.
And then some. Like it was like they came back, but then it was terrible.
So and it was really it bad again. Too for like 3 days at least after.
Yeah.
It's really poking the wound even more, because when stuff was down, it wasn't just that, okay, I can't download new games off the store. It's everything's so tightly integrated that there's stuff like some games you would like start a game like this game doesn't work without connectivity. And then you'd be like, I have connectivity. What are you talking about? Oh, I have to have, because PSN's down. Now I can't even play the game that I bought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's especially with some of the more recent games like Dragon Age Inquisition just wouldn't work at all because it had to connect through PSN to get to the EA servers.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't even bypass them.
I wonder if at all this sometime this year I'm going to actually play that game. I don't know if you remember a few episodes ago, I said, like, I bought that game when it came out and I haven't even started it. Guess what? I haven't started it yet. that just shows you how
massive my... Well, I still haven't beaten it yet.
Well, so. I've got a few other games that are... I mean, I already have a big backlog, but I think I made a really poor decision to buy some new games that are like 40 to 50 hours, like Final Fantasy X2 and whatever the two remasters. And then I bought Soul Sacrifice Delta for the Vita, which is a longer game as well. I haven't even started that. I just keep buying games. I've said this before, but I have a problem.
Somebody help me.
Oh, dear.
So what else is going on? It's been kind of a quiet week, I think.
Yeah.
Except for there's the Nintendo news, but I feel like that's been discussed to death. Unless, is there anything you want to add about that?
Well, I think really there's nothing to add. It's like, until they actually release one of these games...
Right, there's actually literally nothing to talk
about. Announce what their online
at.
Service is going to look like. There isn't really anything to discuss. We can speculate till the end of time, but until they actually release something, there's no way to know if it's going to be good or bad.
Yeah. Are you concerned at all for Nintendo's direction?
I don't think so. I think they realize that they've kind of been taking a back seat to a lot of innovation that's been happening while they've been busy making new Wii consoles. They're crap at online. Just period. Yeah. They can't do it. They're not good at it. They don't know how. Like, when your greatest attempt at multiplayer involves friend codes, so they need help, and they recognize that, and they're getting help from somebody that knows what they're doing. As alternatives to Game Center go, what Dina has is fairly good from what I've heard.
Interesting.
So, I mean, with their technical know-how and Nintendo's game design chops, I have a feeling that whatever they create together will probably be pretty good.
We'll see. So. It's a bold new direction for them, at least, considering how...
Yeah, and more interesting, they basically announced a new console at that announcement. They mentioned, we have another console, the NX, and we'll talk more about it next year.
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, so they didn't really say anything about it. They just kind of mentioned it was a radical new console with a novel new something or other.
See, this kind of pisses me off when companies pre-announce stuff far in advance. It's like, it's kind of vaporware at this point.
And they thought that Wii U sales were bad before.
Well, the stupid thing about this is that, okay, there are two issues, right? So you pre-announce something that far ahead, you have two problems. One, people are going to be hesitant, depending on your track record, that this will even be a real thing. That, you know, because it could be canceled, because that's happened before with companies that have done this kind of stuff. Or they'll be... still anticipate the release of this product so far in advance that they're just going to not buy any of the products that you do have on shelves. So that means you're now losing revenue, right?
Yeah.
And this is why companies like Apple don't pre-announce stuff so far in advance, because they just know people are not going to buy a new iPhone when they need it, or they're not going to buy a new MacBook Pro, because if they knew a new one was going to come out in a month, then they would just go and they would just wait.
Well, I mean, at this point, we kind of do know when new iPhones come out.
Like, well, we know it's more predictable with that for sure.
A new iPhone is likely going to come out in September or October this year.
Yeah, but yeah. I know. But for the average consumer, though, like people ask me, you know, often enough, people will ask me, when is the new Mac? Is there a new MacBook Pro coming out next month? And they have no concept of, even though they're so used to the cycle of like a new iPhone every year, people still, even with iPhones, they're like, when is the new iPhone coming out? And it'll be like May. I'm like, dude, it comes out like in September, in the fall, like every other year. Like some people just have no idea. They're completely disconnected. That's fine, but that's the reality.
Yeah.
So what's going on with the new 3DS XL? I heard Brianna Wu talking about how the improved processor and screen makes everything feel a lot faster, just like in general, like with the menus and stuff. I know you bought one, right? How do you feel about that?
It's so much better. And the 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the big one.
It makes the old 3D look so bad. Like, the old 3D was already bad, but this just makes it look even more bad.
Sure. Sure.
Like it's just perfect. It knows where your face is, so just moving it, it just tracks perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Really great viewing angles.
Is the screen noticeably better? Like, is the contrast and viewing angles and all that stuff?
I would say
it's
maybe a little better. The resolution hasn't changed at all.
We're still at the same whatever PPI that.
Yeah, it's not any better.
Now, is that do you know? Is that like an engineering limitation with the way the 3D is that they can't just
They could make a sharper screen. I just don't think they want to because of cost.
Right. They're already at $200 or whatever it is.
Yeah, Nintendo has traditionally made consoles that are affordable. Like, it's not in their business model to really go for something that's, like, really crazy top of the line. That's why their full consoles tend to be underpowered compared to their competitors. But that's a strategy that may not hold much water anymore. I could actually see the NX being as powerful as the PS4, potentially.
Well, I mean, that's certainly, at least for developers, that would make them a lot happier to be able to do what they want to
The current state of game development is basically such that if you want to make a cross-platform title, it's far easier to make something just for PC, PS4, and Xbox One because it's all running on x86 architecture. So you can just kind of write once, and it all just compiles.
Yeah. I've heard repeatedly from game developers that make stuff for the Wii U is that it's frustrating from a technical... Like, when the technical limitations of a platform force you to make compromises that you don't want to make in your game.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what a lot of people end up having to do if they want to support it, which is really bad.
Yeah.
Because, you can't put an Unreal Engine 4 game on the Wii U. Like, you just can't.
Right, right.
So, your Order 1886 or...
Yeah, that's not happening.
Bloodborne or whatever.
No,
like, it's...
No way.
None of those games are going to work. Like...
Well, I mean, you wouldn't even want to... Sure, you could scale down textures. It'll look like crap, though. I mean, you wouldn't want that.
Yeah, but it's not even that. Like, due to the drastic reduction in processing power, like, the advanced AI stuff...
Sure,
like,
sure.
I don't know if you know, but Shadow of Mordor, the PS3 version, is technically a lot worse than the PS4 version simply because the processing power isn't high enough to run the Nemesis system.
Okay.
So
is that like their own? Well, I mean, I haven't played the PS3 version of that game. I played the PS4 version.
Yeah. So you know how in the PS4 version, like, orcs show up and they remember you and
track you down? Yes. That is pretty
awesome.
None
of that is in the PS3 version because it's not powerful enough to run that AI.
Okay, so that's a legitimate... That's a huge benefit you're losing now.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the Wii U isn't even as powerful as that. So imagine all of the compromises they would have to make just to get the game on it. So a lot of developers don't even bother, basically. So Nintendo's losing a lot of ground on third party. Mm-hmm. And this is a problem they seem to continually run into because it's like... Their consoles basically end up being a machine to play Nintendo games.
Yeah.
So if they want to try and fight that stigma,
then
their next console really ought to be on a level playing field with the others.
I think it has to be. I don't think they can... I would be very shocked if they didn't have something... reasonably competitive with current generation hardware that we have now. It has to come close to the PS4 or the Xbox One because just looking at their releases, you had the Wii and then the Wii U came out after, right? So, And then the game, even if you go back further and look at the GameCube, those were like release after release after release, all incredibly underpowered and way, way behind, at least what, two generations behind, if you compare it to what was out at the time that they released those products. I remember when the GameCube came out and people were just laughing at the processing power of that thing. Like, this thing doesn't even do HD. I don't think it did. I think at that time, like, I think 720p was what was kind of the norm, and it couldn't even do that. It was like 480p, I think.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not butchering the technical details. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
But it was really, really bad at that time. So this is like a thing with Nintendo. So it's like, how much, I think it's like inevitable. Like, how many more years can you go releasing underpowered hardware? Because it's like, even if you make the argument that consumers don't care so much about that stuff, which I don't think is true. I'm sure that it, you know, it is a factor for some, but let's just say the majority of people don't care.
Yeah.
You still have the people that need, the only way your console product will sell if there are actual games available for that console. And people, guess what, will not buy your console unless there are games on it. So the first people they need to take care of is developers. And if developers are saying, you know, this game we've been working on for the last 2 years, guess what? Well, there's no way we can physically bring this to your platform because of X hardware limitation. That's going to really hurt them.
Mm.
So I don't know. I'm trying to be optimistic for Nintendo because
I mean,
the company. I want them to do well. I want them to be competitive, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll ever have, you know, the explosion like we had in the 80s with the NES. I think those days are kind of gone. But if they can even just capture like a sliver of that excitement to get from their consumers and from developers in general, that people are actually really excited to develop for the platform, I think that's a big win.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's like, oh, we've made it slightly more powerful than the PS4, and we've made our architecture even easier to develop for. Like, even if it was something like that, mm-hmm. it would help a lot.
Yeah.
And then, if they show off, like, Zelda in basically Unreal 4...
Yeah, like, that could look pretty good.
Oh, hey guys, I know you were all anxious for the new Zelda, but we're actually going to release it for the new console.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they showed, like, and everyone's like, I bought a Wii U for nothing. And then they showed the trailer and everyone's like, I have to buy the next console now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's always how that goes.
Right, exactly.
It's like, but new Zelda.
You know people like the 3DS and the actual 3D capabilities of that device. I've been out of touch and haven't kept up with 3D TV technology, but do you think they would ever, do you ever see that stuff catching on, like in the living room, like if they were to release a new console that was capable of 3D stuff? I guess the TVs would have to be there, really, to be able to match. Like, people would have to be able to afford a 3D TV that's actually capable.
I honestly don't think it's coming back. I think they tried it, and nobody was biting. Because it's just not the same
mm-hmm.
as it is in the theaters. Like, in the theaters, right. 3D, okay, fine. But
yeah, because it's on a massive screen. It's
on a screen that's, like, at best 15 feet away from you. It's this tiny postage stamp that you're trying to look through, and it just doesn't work. Like, the 3DS is right in front of your face, so it kind of makes sense.
Sure.
And it kind of works. Like, you're holding this little window into a world, which is like, okay, that's cool. But with a TV, it's just not the same experience that it could be.
Yeah.
So I honestly don't think that they're going to go for that.
It seems unlikely for sure. Like, unless somehow 3D TVs really take off, and clearly they've been on the market for many years. And yes, the prices do continue to drop, but barely anybody's buying them.
Or people buy them, but they don't care about the 3D part.
Well, I mean, the stupid thing about the 3D stuff, and the reason why I think one of the many reasons why it hasn't taken off is that the cost of acquiring a good 3D TV is still in orders of magnitude greater than just a typical LED LCD TV, right? So there's that, and then plus, people that are already buying Blu-rays have to buy the 3D Blu-ray version. There's a whole set. If you go into any retail store, there's like a separate section of 3D Blu-rays, and they're like at least $10 more. Like, who's going to buy a $35 physical copy of a movie just to see it in 3D when they get home and then have to put on stupid glasses to even watch it?
Yeah. Right?
It's just like the whole experience is just a joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the thing is, 3D has to be, the TVs have to come down like way, way, way down in price. And not so much, I don't even care about the glasses, but like, you can't have a separate version of the same movie with a $10 price premium just to buy 3D.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't these Blu-rays coming out with 3D? Just make it like a two disc thing. I don't understand. Like, it's like we have you know, you can buy Blu-rays. Oftentimes you'll buy a Blu-ray and it'll have like the Blu-ray plus, like, you know, they'll advertise, oh, and then it also comes with the DVD version of the movie for free, basically, right? That should be how they're doing it, but they're not doing it. And nobody's buying these freaking $35 Blu-ray 3D movies.
Or getting that one packaged version of Avatar with a Panasonic 3D TV.
Yeah.
It's the only way to get it.
Right, right. Well, that, and, you know, Avatar's like arguably one of the best and possibly only truly great 3D movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really not selling it. It's not making a good point to, yeah, I'm just not enticed.
Nope.
Not even that great of a movie, I mean.
No. The only
reason why I saw that movie was because of the 3D. From a technical perspective, I was interested in it.
Yeah, like, it's literally Dances with Wolves in space.
The dialogue's pretty atrocious.
In fact, I think on a previous Impromptu 1.0 episode, we called it that.
Right.
I think we actually had that as an episode title.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Possibly. I don't remember.
That. It's been a while, but yeah.
It's like every kind of, not even trope, but the kind of corny dialogue that people make fun of in movies, like as a parody, like that movie had, like, this isn't going to happen, not on my watch. I mean, didn't James Cameron write the screenplay for that?
Yeah.
That just says it all.
I mean, I think one of them was even all like, game over, man, game over.
Yeah, that's pretty terrible.
It's like, yeah, like all the soldiers were basically the same as the soldiers in Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And then we threw in, like, whatever his name was, the guy with the scar on his face, he was basically like, Full Metal Jacket sergeant combined.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
A racist.
Right.
Like, yeah, we're going to get these aliens and burn down their tree so we can mine stuff. Like, okay.
Isn't it basically, doesn't it have the same plot as Fern Gully? You ever seen Fern Gully?
Yeah, that too. It's Dances when I with saw Wolves it, slash Fern Gully.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
So, and he
wants to, you know, he wants to do,
he's already writing the script for the next two. Yeah. He's writing the script for the next two as we speak.
The next two, so they're going to be three. Oh, God.
Yeah, he's planning to film 2 and 3 back to back, like the Matrix movies, because we know how well that turned out, right?
Oh, dear. Well, we can always vote with our wallets and not go to them.
Oh, come on. We're going to go to them. It's going to happen.
I'll probably see it once in the theater, but I'm not going to see it more times than that.
Yeah. It'll probably be in high frame rate as well, like the Hobbit movies.
You know, actually, I have not seen... I haven't seen those Hobbit movies, so I really don't know what that experience is like, seeing the higher frame rate.
It's a little jarring at first, but then you get used to it, and it feels like you're watching a video game a bit.
I don't feel compelled... You know, I've never been a huge sort of... Lord of the Ring, just the whole general mythos of it, like orcs and that high fantasy stuff doesn't really interest me as much. Like I was entertained by the movies, I enjoyed them. I thought the Lord of the Ring series trilogy or whatever was well done, but I'm not like a massive fan. Like I don't have any inclination to watch them over and over again. I don't even have like I thought about buying the box set, but I thought. You know, I saw those movies in the theaters and I don't want to see them again. I like sci-fi more. But in general, like with The Hobbit, I hear such conflicting things. Like some people really didn't like those movies and some people thought they were okay. I thought I remember hearing something about this. Was it the second one being better than the first or the first being worse than the second? I don't know.
Yeah.
But what are they at? Are they at two movies, three movies? I think they had another one planned, right?
Not sure.
Do you see this new Mission Impossible trailer? I haven't seen it yet.
No, I saw a story for it. It's like more crazy stunts.
Yep. Which Tom Cruise admirably pulls off
by himself, yeah.
He's actually hanging off a plane.
Yeah. His insurance company must constantly be scared out of their minds.
They probably don't get any sleep. Can you imagine how much it costs?
You just get a call at 3 a.m. in the middle of the night. You're just like, he wants to do what now?
He wants to hang off a plane.
Did you Someone's tell having him an die horribly?
Somebody's having an aneurysm.
Yeah. It's like...
I wonder how much it actually costs to insure that guy.
Oh, God.
Millions, for sure.
Oh, yeah. At least. Like, just... Yeah. Like, you would probably have to calculate something like the risk of him dying versus the amount of money he brings to the boss office out of any given movie... Something like that. Mm-hmm. So we could be talking like $30, $40, $50 million. And then like some kind of multiplier based on how likely it is he could be seriously hurt.
Yeah, I enjoy the Mission Impossible movies. The only one I didn't really like so much was the second one, but the last one, the Ghost Protocol, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, Ghost Protocol was good.
The whole thing with like the whole... practical stunt that they did with scaling that freaking building. What was it, in Dubai or whatever?
Yeah.
That was just insane. And they knocked out a window in that freaking building for that scene, eh?
Yeah.
Like, apparently that was not, like, a kind of close set. There was no trickery or anything. They actually took the freaking glass out of the building.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
That's just nutty. Anyways, we should probably wrap.
Yep.
And on that bombshell, I wonder if that guy's ever coming back to the BBC, eh?
Oh,
the whole thing with Clarkson,
yeah. Well, didn't he, like, attack someone?
We don't know all the details. I thought there were rumors or something that he, like, I know he got into, like, at least a verbal argument. I don't know if he physically, some people said, oh, he punched a producer or something like that. I don't know if that really happened, but.
Yeah.
Well, there's definitely no, if that really did happen, there's no.
Yeah, like if there's he no really excuse did for that. Do that, then yeah, he shouldn't get his show back.
But the thing is like that show brings in the most, that is the highest ranking show that
they have. Yeah, but I mean, that doesn't still give you the right to punch
someone I know,
in the
but
face.
I don't think that they have the balls to cancel that show.
Oh,
like
I don't
at the very least,
I
think they would replace.
It.
They would
I think
replace
they'd
Clarkson.
Replace him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, not as many people might watch. Yeah. But
it's true. Mean,
there would be people that would be like, "Well, I'm not going to watch it now." But a lot of people won't care.
Who would you pick as a replacement for him?
Oh God!
Just off the top of your head.
I don't know.
I've got one, but
like,
I haven't given it.
I don't
much
know.
Time.
Maybe one of the celebrity guests that's not doing anything.
See, the first person that came to mind for me is Rowan Atkinson because he's so good with physical comedy, and he's also a car enthusiast. Like he knows his stuff, and he has a big collection of cars.
That could work. I'd watch.
And
that.
Actually, Clarkson has talked about him on many occasions about him being a car enthusiast. So I could see that working. I don't know what kind of chemistry that Atkinson would have with the other two, but I could see it working. The only thing is it's questionable because that guy's doing movies and stuff. So I don't know. Like it could work though, because that show has 6 episodes a year. And they take a lot of time to film them, but I would think that there would be enough time for him to still have a movie career and do that show, right? Because it's not like it's not a TV series. Like if Rowan Atkinson was doing like an American TV series where you have like 22 episodes and they're like filming for like a majority portion of the year, that would be difficult to do. But with like a BBC series, if they say, I don't know how many months of the year that they take to film that, I would imagine it's at least, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months, right, in total.
Yeah.
Plus planning and all that sort of stuff. But they're not spending 12 months producing that show. So
no.
He could, in theory, still do other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't do a lot of films.
He doesn't do a lot of stuff anyways, right? I mean,
yeah.
So, we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want him back, but...
It really all depends what really happened.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. No point in jumping to conclusions.
Yeah. They actually, they brought up, I was just listening to the latest episode of Analog, and KC and Mike were talking about how this whole thing with Clarkson, they hope that, you know, if there is truth to what happened, if he did punch a producer, you know, they were saying that they hope Clarkson kind of realizes that he's not invincible, that there are consequences, that, you know, if he does get fired, then this will be a good wake-up call to him that, you know, he can't just do whatever he wants. Like, he's an adult. He's a grown man. Like, he needs to be able to control his emotions and have adult conversations without, you know, without getting into some kind of verbal abusive argument. You know, either verbally abusive or physically abusive. Like, dude, you can be better than that.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll make an official statement. I'm sure they probably will have to at some point.
Yeah. Like, they can't just leave it hanging. So, I'm sure we'll
if
find
they
out
do,
one way or the other.
The way I see it going is if they do bring him back on the show, I would imagine the next episode will be him apologizing profusely for being an idiot.
Yeah, probably.
But anyways, I think that's basically it for this week.
Yep. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Impromptu. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave a rating on iTunes and let your friends know about us. Detailed show notes for each episode are available on our website at theimpromptu.net. You can follow the show on Twitter at theimpromptu, as well as our hosts individually at Zen Impulse for Michael Norton and at Zero Distraction for Alex Knight. As we are entirely listener supported, you can donate to us at theimpromptu.net/donate.
All proceeds go towards covering bandwidth as well as equipment upgrades to uphold the highest level of audio quality you've come to expect. We really do appreciate your support, and we look forward to seeing you next time.